my great pleasure to start the afternoon session off with T-Mobile, and we have here Neville Ray. Neville is Vice President with T-Mobile with focus on network engineering and operations. So we're going to ask him to make some comments and then go through the normal fireside chat format. Before I do that, a couple of disclosures here. Within the last 12 months, Morgan Stanley managed or co-managed a public offering of securities for Deutsche Telekom. Within the last 12 months, we've received compensation for investment banking services from Deutsche Telekom. In the next 3 months, Morgan Stanley expects to receive or intends to see compensation for investment banking services from Deutsche Telekom. An employee director of Morgan Stanley is a director of Deutsche Telekom. Morgan Stanley makes a market in securities of Deutsche Telekom. So with that, Neville.
Welcome. Catherine and I are pleased to be with you this afternoon. Thankfully, she takes a much better photograph than I do. Jump through this one. Okay, so T-Mobile. I'm going to start off with just a couple of slides in the deck here, giving you an overview of the operational strategy behind the T-Mobile business in the U.S. You probably heard the phrase "get more." You probably associated that with more of the value proposition, the more minutes. I can tell you that underlying everything we do at T-Mobile is a fundamental and absolute commitment to the customer. And hence that tagline at the top, "the customer is why." In the more minute space, I think we've continued to lead in the industry. We recently launched the three-day weekend, yet to be matched, I believe, by any of our major competition. But we're not just about more minutes. I think we've established ourselves very, very well in the marketplace in terms of this feature statement. We've had a stunning array of devices and handsets and terminals available to our customers over the last year and 18 months. Specifically in the camera phone segment, we've led. We've had unique devices with the T-Mobile Sidekick, and I think we've done extremely well in the RIM BlackBerry channel. Not are we just working on that. I think we've led with our hotspot offering, our Wi-Fi 802.11 service, and I'll talk about that a little more. Underlying everything we do, the service commitment to the customer. And we've been rated by J.D. Power as one of the best companies in the U.S. from a customer service perspective. We're following up now, ensuring that our network quality and our network service is on a par with the service to the customer in other areas today. So if I look at our success over the last year, and I think this is a great story for T-Mobile USA. We have announced our net adds for Q4. We did a pre-release on that. In excess of 1 million new customers came to the T-Mobile family in Q4 of 2003. A yearly growth figure there of in excess of 3.2 million customers, well ahead of the majority of our competition. Verizon leading the pack out there in the industry today, but we're very close to them. If you look at the growth on a percentage basis for T-Mobile, an amazing story. We increased our customer base almost a full third during the 2003 period. And you can see how that stacks up against the growth from the majority of our competitors today. The fastest growing business in the U.S. I'm not going to talk about financials today. We haven't released our results. We will on March 10th. So please, if you can hold some of your questions until post that date. I will say that we've secured strong margin improvement as we've grown our business. And we lead in many areas in the cost basis of our business. So how do we do all that? This is another fundamental and underlying strategy of our business. We call it the power of one, and it's what enables us to win in the marketplace. The first strap line there outlines the T-Mobile position. One technology, GSM 1900. We don't have multiple systems to manage. I don't have to worry about TDMA legacy systems. We focus on GSM. We've been a GSM play from day one. We know what we do extremely well. We're one of the most advanced GSM businesses in the world, and without a doubt the best in the United States. We have one billing system, one sales structure, one customer care organization. What does that all mean for us? It means one, scalability, and we've proven time and time again how quickly we can grow this business. It gives us operational effectiveness from a cost perspective, as well as general operating efficiencies. And last, but by no means least, it's provided us the ability to execute in this marketplace at what I would say is lightning speed. I think many of our competitors look at what we do in the marketplace and they still scratch their heads today. This is the underlying strategy behind what we've done. We didn't get here easily. You know, the T-Mobile business today came from multiple GSM providers in the US in the 2000-2001 period, but it was a key strategy of our business to score the power of one in the early days. And you can see the story for the competition, some extremely complex legacy systems, technology scenarios, sales structures, et cetera, which make life very difficult. Just imagine implementing local number portability when you've got, you know, three billing systems to work with or multiple care systems. For us, we only have to do it once, and hence our success in portability and our speed of porting. If you add to that the bottom half of this slide, the T-Mobile international picture, we're part of that family in excess of 61 million customers worldwide today. So we're part of a very big business, the number three wireless operator worldwide. Huge buying power, both in the terminal space and in the infrastructure space. Again, enabling us to deliver huge cost efficiencies. So onto network and some of our story. This graph depicts our covered population growth over the last 2 to 3 years. Again, a very compelling story. We've moved from 170 million covered pops to 224 of our own. We've taken that number in excess of 250 million, a stat that stands up with many of our competitors very, very well. And we've done that in a very short time frame, very cost effectively. We today have the most extensive and mature GSM GPRS network in the US. We've aggressively gone after the white spaces. You're all probably familiar with that term after it's been discussed several times today. I'll show you what I mean on a map shortly. But we've aggressively secured additional coverage outside of our core footprints. 26,000 cell sites on air for T-Mobile today. We added 3,300 in 2003. That number stacks up to anything any of the competition was doing and 2x many of our major competitors. A goal this year to increase to about 4,000 plus new cell sites. A huge and massive focus on network quality within T-Mobile, backed up by strong capital funding. We will also be rolling out Edge during the 2004 timeframe and also AMR. AMR, an acronym to learn and forget instantly, adaptive multi-rate, but a new codec for the handset that brings both incremental voice quality and substantial capacity gains in the GSM arena. The map very quickly, real eye test this one, I'm afraid, but the light magenta, this is probably easier to see on your handsets, depicts many of the areas where we've secured 1900 GSM roaming in recent months from many of the other carriers out there. Western Wireless, a key play for us, added 10,000 miles of rural road coverage. Local interest, I'm based in New York here through Rural Cellular Corporation. We've just turned up coverage in both Vermont and areas of Maine that you can see on the map. Great opportunities for us in the white space arena still out there, and we're very aggressively working with other carriers to continue to build out this footprint. I came over to the U.S., I'm obviously not the U.S. born, about 10 years ago, and I can say to look at a GSM coverage map like that today, I think that was a pipe dream 10 years ago. It's there and it's real today, and it's getting better every year, and it's great to see. So if we talk about our technology strategy, you've heard everybody talk about GPRS and Edge. T-Mobile obviously has, everywhere we have our own GSM service, we provide GPRS data services today. We're moving through with Edge deployment this year, mainly focused on our urban and downtown areas. in 2004. The difference with T-Mobile today is our 802.11 hotspot strategy. We're providing broadband wireless to customers today, and we have done for some time. We probably have made the most aggressive steps in this arena. I think many of the other major carriers sat back and watched and are now starting to mobilize in this space. The Wi-Fi space is satisfying many, many needs for our customers out there. And as we bundle together our billing and authentication, these services have become a great opportunity across the U.S. I'll talk more on this in 1 second. Just to talk briefly about some of our leadership in messaging and data. Obviously, we've been an SMS carrier from day one. You can see the volumes of SMS we were pumping through in Q3. I can give you some stats on Q4. We were up to 500 million SMSs in December alone. I think those numbers you'll see are comparable with Verizon, a customer base almost three times what we have. Our users are very data savvy. They're into SMS. They're into the camera phones. Our data ARPUs have gone from 2.7% at the end of Q3 to around the 4% level for Q4. So good revenue growth coming through from the data services. We are the number one seller of the BlackBerry device in the U.S. Numbers in excess of 100,000 today have been sold, and we were one of the key developers that worked with RIM on the color multi-band BlackBerry. And last point on this slide, our GPRS roaming, which enables you to take that BlackBerry and have a seamless email delivery experience in Europe. We're up to, the stat yesterday I think was 49 countries that offer GPRS roaming today. And we continue to push out the boundaries on those services. A great story for the business user. Last slide and I'll wrap up. Just a little bit about our hotspot strategy. Again, the key here is delivery of 3G wireless broadband type services today. It's out there. Our hotspot count is in excess of 4,100 today, and that number's growing. You can see on the bottom of the slide here the array of locations where you can use hotspot service and the partners that we have secured over recent months. That slide will be full of new players over the next 6 to 9 months. Phenomenal growth rate in our locations. The airline lounges, hopefully some of you have experienced that service. A great opportunity to utilize the laptop and download the email when you need to. Last key stat, two-thirds of the revenue coming from contract subscribers, not from the pay-as-you-go, the guy who logs on for the session for $5 or $10. Contract subscriptions and a big interest in the business community around this service, and one that we think will grow. So that wraps my comments. Hopefully that's given you some insight into the T-Mobile story, and we'll move into Q&A.
Great. Yeah, thank you, Neville. Can you talk a little bit about the UMTS and 3G, and also push to talk, a couple of things we've been talking about a lot today. You obviously have the global network to look to. Are you going to lead? Are you going to follow? And what sort of timing do you think we're going to see on this?
Right. I mean, to take the UMTS question first, I think one of the key benefits we have of being part of the T-Mobile international family is that UMTS is very real within T-Mobile. The German markets are up to, I believe, 40% of the population covered. The learnings are ongoing, and a massive focus in Europe to push through with UMTS service. For us in the U.S., that gives us a great learning opportunity, and it gives us greater confidence that when time comes to launch UMTS, that we'll be able to deliver a much more secure and an improved customer experience. That said, I think the biggest challenge with UMTS in the U.S. arena is spectrum. It is still a bandwidth hungry technology, and at this point in time, we do not have definitive plans to launch those services in the U.S. today. I think we'll wait and see. We're very focused on spectrum opportunities as and when they arise. We have adequate spectrum and more than adequate in many markets for the services we provide today, and the enhanced services we'll provide with Edge. but UMTS, we're in that kind of wait-and-see position at this point in time. But that said, I think the different thing between us and some of the other carriers is that we moved into the broadband wireless space very aggressively last year. And, you know, we have a 4,000 site network which is delivering wireless broadband to our customers today. That's not next year, it's not 2006, it's 2003 and 2004. And I think that's a key differentiator for T-Mobile. On the push-to-talk side, I think, again, we're in the wait-and-see mode. We've obviously carefully evaluated the push-to-talk technology opportunities and the commercial opportunities. We've watched the Verizon and Sprint activity fairly closely. I don't think we see push-to-talk as a key element of our strategy today. That may change in time. I think we will look to integrate push-to-talk type features into our consumer offering where it makes sense and when there's value for the consumer. But it's I don't think you'll see very much from T-Mobile in the push-to-talk space this year.
Okay. You've talked about your leadership in devices. What do you see in devices coming down the road? Is there a new kind of quantum leap, just as camera phones were, something that can leverage the capabilities that you have in your network now?
I honestly think on the devices side, so much has changed inside the last 12 months. I think the sky's the limit. I mean, we've gone from ugly black and white brick phones to color terminals, camera phones. I think we'll end up with megapixel type camera phones. We've now got alternative communication devices coming in, the games, the music. I think there's a lot of opportunities out there still in the terminal space that are yet to be tapped and fully developed. I think that said, we've pushed very, very hard with our visual communication strategy, the kind of, we call it See What I See. That's proven to be extremely well received by our customers and potential customers. And I think camera phones are a very exciting opportunity, for 2004 on an ongoing basis.
One of the things that I think you're in a great position for is this wireline substitution. You know, you don't have a local phone company to kind of tire your hands with that. You're not in the whole TDMA GSM conversion. You've got a decent spectrum position. And Friday's Free, you could argue, to some extent, is involved in driving that substitution. Yeah. Can you talk about that specific project, and how did the network load that you experienced as a result of that, how did that work in terms of what your expectations were, and are we moving more towards an unlimited sort of calling plan that really moves that 1,500 minutes per month to more of your base, and really starts, and a related question is this notion of a home hub or some sort of way to help the in-building penetration, help link it in with the wiring that you have around.
I think it's a good question, and there's a lot in there in terms of where T-Mobile is. I think we've led in many ways off-peak usage on an unlimited basis, 3-day weekends. We do that to, one, be competitive, but two, because that's what our consumers ask for. And I think that the opportunity for landline substitution and/or replacement is greater than it's ever been historically. I think it's driving the very competitive nature of the wireless business for some of the companies that have a landline parent. In the U.S., the Verizons and the SBCs and so on, they need that wireless penetration to supplement the loss of the landline customer. We have many, many customers who only have a T-Mobile phone, and there is no reason for them to go to a landline connection. And I think that's much greater in the youth and the 20-something segment, the college kids, et cetera, et cetera. How have we tackled that load? We have constantly driven capacity into our networks. I think we, in New York today, I think our network probably pumps as many minutes as Verizon's does, to be perfectly honest. And we've done that very well. We've done it very cost effectively. We've supported, the home use. We have a very aggressive program to improve residential coverage. mainly from the outside in at this point in time, but a much thicker coat of that RF paint across our networks, and that's the big focus in 2004. It's not footprint expansion; it's making the footprint we have much denser, much richer in terms of quality, and that will naturally enable, I think, better home usage. I think it's a great opportunity. It's one we're very focused on. And I think, as you said earlier in your question, it's one that we are different, and we don't have the landline parent to worry about in that space in the U.S. It's great to have the revenues of a landline company in DT funding and supporting what we do in the U.S. without having that connection. So.
Good. Okay. Let's open it up to the audience. Derek.
Hi, I'm Derek Queen from Jennison. A couple questions, if I may. Just first, you mentioned that the number of cell sites in 04 is going to be greater than the number in 03. Just a naive question, does this necessarily mean that your spending on equipment increases in 04 over 03?
Our capital guidance is slightly increased, I would say, for I'm not going to disclose numbers, but slightly greater for 2004 than it was in 2003. I think we are one of the leading carriers in our cost effectiveness in terms of building cell sites. So the fact that we're building, 20% more does not mean that we will increase our costs by 20%. Our capital funding in that space, we're constantly driving, driving the bottom line. Absolutely, we're going to be spending more equipment with our radio vendors, with our switching vendors, and in the construction arenas.
And then a second question: you mentioned you're the leading seller of BlackBerry, and you said over 100,000 to date. And talking with some of the network integrators working on your network specifically, they have said to me that the BlackBerry has the potential to cause massive congestion on the network. So if we were to see the current growth trajectory of BlackBerry's continue, that T-Mobile really is going to have to make some difficult decisions about how to plan the network. Could you talk a little bit more about that and the implications from BlackBerry and why that is?
We'd love to have that problem. I think we're a ways from it at this point in time. I can give you an example. I live and breathe in New York every day, and a huge percentage of those BlackBerrys I talked about are here in Manhattan with key business users. We have one of the busiest, SGSNs that we use Nokia infrastructure for our GPRS backbone. Nokia tell us we have the busiest SGSN in the world within T-Mobile in Manhattan. So that gives you some indication of how much work we've done in that GPRS arena compared to some of our European partners. That said, I think we absolutely know what we're doing. And as congestion issues and loading issues have arisen, we've taken good care of them. And our program over the next 12 to 18 months is to certainly bolster the GPRS experience. We're very focused on quality of service in the GPRS arena, which is key to the BlackBerry today. It will be great to have an edge-type BlackBerry device, and that's something that I believe is in the works. Just a great opportunity. I live and breathe with my BlackBerry. I think it's a great device. It's a great business tool. It's a great tool to free up personal time. And we're very pleased with the results of all of the work that we did with RIM over the last 2 years.
Not to diminish the progress you've made on the map there, but there's still a lot of white on that map, and as a T-Mobile subscriber, I can say that there are a lot of places you go where there's just no coverage whatsoever. Have you given any reconsideration thought to this one band strategy, i.e. perhaps using 850 spectrum to cover that white area better?
We're always watching that space. I think to address the first part of your question, we've come a long way in 2 years from where we were with our overall coverage. We have coverage in every major city in the U.S. The big six carriers don't necessarily have that same level of coverage that we do or the other five in some of the locations that we serve. Where we've struggled is in some of the rural areas and the out of the core metro areas where it's been tough and expensive to go after that footprint. 850 roaming brings opportunities, but we're very successful at this point in time with 1900 roaming. If I take Western Wireless, they're overlaying both 850 and 1900 and doing that very well. The likes of RCC are pushing on 1900. And we've partnered with many of those white space providers, helping with Spectrum, et cetera, to ensure that 1900 service comes through. So are we doing anything in the 850 space? I think our reticence there has been around the terminals. You know, 850 terminals were hard to come by. And I think the companies that sell those devices today have spent a lot of time and effort to over the last year and 18 months with the terminal vendors to secure an 850 GSM product in the US. You know, 1 billion GSM customers worldwide and a very, very small fraction, a number of that billion using 850 GSM. As those handset and terminal solutions become more readily available and more cost effective, I think it's something that we will look at. There is some good 850 footprint out there from some of the rural carriers. That said, I heard some comments earlier on today about how, you know, there's this huge difference between 1900 and 850 spectrum. You know, there's a lot of things that have happened in the GSM space over the last 2 years. You know, high power PAs. You know, the ability in low capacity environments to sync up time slots with PA solutions to extend coverage extensions. And we're finding that many of the 1900 rural providers are actually doing very well providing 1900 footprint and service when overlaid on an existing 850 network. So there's a lot of smarts that you can work in a low capacity environment to ensure that 1900 service is good. So it's not a slam dunk. It's something that, you know, we're looking at. It's not as easy and as obvious a transition as it may seem.
A few questions on the BlackBerry product. Of the 100,000 subscribers you have on network, can you talk a little bit about the mix between those customers using it purely for an enterprise play and those using BlackBerry web client? And also, can you discuss a little bit about the revenue sharing agreement between T-Mobile and BlackBerry, how that works out?
I can't disclose the last part of your question. One, because I don't know the answer, and I'm not sure I could if I did. On the first part, I can give you approximate numbers. It's heavily focused on the enterprise user. I do not know that percentage, but that's the main play on the RIM BlackBerry today.
Following up on that one, there are other vendors coming in the market with BlackBerry-like devices or functionality. Has T-Mobile tested any of those out, such as the Trio, which at least I understand is not yet being sold through the stores, or other type of similar devices? And do you forecast that you'll be sort of complementing the BlackBerry with other similar offerings in future?
We've spent a fair amount of time with the Trio product. I think it certainly has, you know, opportunities within, you know, the T-Mobile world going forward. I think we focused hard on the RIM BlackBerry to make sure that product was a success, and our sales results have evidenced that was the right strategy. We didn't want to push and work too many terminal opportunities at once. Will that change over time? Very possibly. The Trio is a good device. Pocket PC, there's a whole host of you know, different devices out there, and I think that space is filling up again at a tremendous rate. The Sidekick for us, a lower end data device, has sold in huge numbers. In black and white, we brought out the color version, hugely popular, especially in youth and teen markets. Very unsophisticated in many ways data device, but the youth and teens love it. And you know, it's just one example of the unique things you can do as a carrier today in the marketplace.
Neville, if you don't roll out push-to-talk service this year, it sounds like you might be the only national carrier without it. Is it that you don't think the customer demand is there yet, or is it more that you're not satisfied with the current state of the technology and you think you'll be able to come out with something better in 05?
I think it's a bit of both. I think we're, you know, in the chart where I put up there, we're selling very, very well in the marketplace today. We're extremely competitive in the market segments that we pursue. We don't see that a push-to-talk feature or service would enhance that selling proposition hugely at this point in time. I think there is the, you know, the mild concern that it becomes the table stakes that everybody expects a device to have, you know, push-to-talk service. I don't think that's going to happen in 04. It may happen in 05. And I think we're going to carefully evaluate the opportunities to see if we can come up with something that is better suited and directed to our customer segments, that maybe utilizes some of the push-to-talk functionality and features, but is more customized towards our own product, our own customer base. So we'll see what next year brings, I think.
On the topic of devices, Nokia's had 50% share or greater in many of your markets. And just kind of curious, as you're looking forward, whether you think some of the Asian manufacturers will have greater presence in your networks going forward.
I think you know, we've been on the GSM side hugely successful with some of the Asian vendors. Samsung has been, you know, a tremendous success with T-Mobile. We brought numerous unique devices to the U.S. with the T-Mobile brand. Some of the first camera phones that came out, you know, the integrated camera phones were great Samsung product. And I personally carried, you know, Samsung devices for many months. Very robust, solid product. So I think the Nokia dominance in the terminal space has changed remarkably, I think, over the last year and 18 months. And I think it will continue to do so. You know, we've seen it more and more in the, you know, the CDMA side of the house. I think on the GSM side, the vendors that do the right thing at the right price and do it effectively with good product, absolutely we're going to work with them and push those products to our customers. The Samsung story is the key one for us. It's been a great success.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about the Western Wireless deal you had and the status of the rollout in that network and whether that involved Western Wireless having to build from scratch cell sites, whether they're just overlaying it on their existing network in that area.
Right. You know, I'd say we're about probably 60-70% through the Western rollout at 1900. The initial phase is a rollout on the existing, you know, 850 network. That said, we work fairly closely with Western to ensure that the 1900 service, when it came up, provided the appropriate level of quality and service to our customers. So we've worked fairly closely with them on that. Will they require you know, infill at some point in time? Possibly. They've worked some of those opportunities already, but the key strategy is a 1900 overlay on the 850 network, using some of the high-power PA products, etc., that are available out there today. The contractual arrangement is very performance focused, so we require a you know, some performance levels from that 1900 network that's tied into the contract. It's not just a pure roaming deal. There are quality and performance metrics embedded in the agreement.
Of the 4,000 new cell sites that you plan to add this year, how would you split the focus between new geographic areas and increase coverage in existing areas?
80% in the existing. New coverage areas probably in the 15 to 20% range. That number may be slightly high. The plan is still evolving as we're working. You know, cell siting in the U.S., I wish it was easier. I spend most of my life, I think, trying to convince people that building cell sites is the right thing to do in these jurisdictions, especially in the Northeast. We would like to see that plan number exceeded. We're funded to do that if the opportunities come about. But the key focus, as I mentioned earlier, is on network quality where we serve our customers today. greater capacity, greater quality, and enhanced capability on the network.
Question do you plan to offer any bundles to compete with what your competitors are offering? And a related question is that your strategic marketing alliance with Comcast, like, does it have a potential to become into a bundling alliance once VoIP kind of products come into the market?
Sorry, when you say bundling?
Like bundling with the wireline, do you have anything with like bundling ideas with the cable companies so that you can offer something of the sort that RBOX are offering right now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as we said earlier on, we don't have an RBOC, you know, connection in the U.S., so our opportunity to bundle services in that space is between zero and none. But that said, we don't think that's necessary to drive our success. I think with the Wi-Fi, the arrangement with Comcast at this point in time is a strategic marketing arrangement, trying to ensure that the 5 million Comcast users of wireless broadband in the home today look to T-Mobile when they go on the road. Other opportunities down the road to come up with creative bundling solutions around that and pricing, absolutely, but I can't disclose any of those at this point in time or where our plans are or where they're headed.
Let's make this the last question.
All right. Could you talk a little bit about WiMAX and OFDM? What do you think of those technologies, and are you considering those for your higher bandwidth data path going forward?
I'd say we've watched from the sidelines. As I mentioned earlier, I think we've got a wireless broadband opportunity that's delivered and out there with our customers today with Wi-Fi and the hotspots. Our 3G options are still open, I would expect we would move down a traditional UMTS type path. I think our concerns around some of the new technologies is the proprietary nature and the costs of those solutions, and what that could mean on a national basis. But we're watching closely to see, for example, what Nextel does. But I think their needs and their requirements in that space, in the data space, are very, very different. Their opportunities and the options they have are very limited compared to ours. And I think we have, traditional, non-proprietary, open standard solutions out there that will undoubtedly, I think, be more cost effective for T-Mobile. So.
Great, Neville. Many thanks. Appreciate your time.
Okay, thank you.